Hey there. Thanks for tuning in to another great episode of Unguarded Shooting. That's a little presumptuous, assuming that this is going to be a great episode.
Well, you're just doing like a pre-show great.
I think that
this is like a code of possession.
If you've listened to episode 1 and episode 2 and any other podcast with me and Michael Luxemburg, my co-host for Unguarded Shooting and my friend and my editor-in-chief, then you know that this episode is going to be great, and that's why you're listening to this podcast. And hey, if you didn't know, then you know now, and I'm glad you're listening for the first time. Follow at Almighty Ballin, follow at ML Surfboard on Twitter, like the Facebook page, almightyballer.com. There's some promo codes I could plug. I don't like advertising.
I don't mind doing that shit. What are the codes?
Don't say bad words.
I don't mind doing that stuff. What are the codes?
I don't know. Dude, the listeners don't want to listen to promo codes.
Okay, next time we do this.
But you have to listen to ads anyways, so I don't know. Just so you know, like, we don't like advertising. It's what we have to do to keep the show going. So, you know,
I like reading ad copy.
He does like
I do like reading ad copy.
Okay. Just like know that this podcast is sponsored by Audible and by SteinerSports.com. And next time we'll set it up. You can get a nice live read written down, and yes, you can knock it out of the park, and it'll be great. But for now, you know, just don't worry about the promo codes. Just keep listening down the line.
we'll get you them codes.
Yeah. Let's start talking about basketball. So the first game of the night that we're going to talk about, you want to start with Knicks Celtics? I mean, we're not going to say much about it because, yeah,
let's knock that one out real quick.
Yeah. Melo got ejected with 4 minutes and 44 seconds left in the second quarter, and the game was pretty much decided then.
Yeah, I mean, the only super notable thing about this, because the game went pretty according to script, the Celtics kind of outclassed the Knicks. The Knicks are a mess. The Celtics are, well, definitely not in their best form.
It was 38-39, I think, when Melo was ejected.
Right, that's what I was about to get to. The biggest thing is that the Celtics were having a real problem with the Knicks interior, having a problem getting defensive rebounds, giving up a lot to Kristaps and Melo, stuff like that. As soon as Melo got ejected, that sort of took the one advantage the Knicks had off the board, and the game got out of hand real quick.
Yeah, no, I mean, we actually, you know, for a look behind the curtain as far as our game watching process, first of all, League Pass, I paid for you, and yet we're watching streams off of Reddit. So, like, get it together, League Pass. Your app is garbage. But second of all, we just moved on from the Knicks and the Celtics after Carmelo got ejected, because that was just going to play itself out.
Well, after, like, we watched a couple minutes without Carmelo, but then it sort of became gross.
Yeah. So, yeah, the Celtics win 115-87. If you want to, you know, if, say, hypothetically, you want to know more about either of those two teams, you know, just go check out Almighty Ballin episode 170. I had Zach Harper on, and we talked about teams that need some fixing. And we talked about the Knicks in the first part. He's coming on Tuesday, so that second part will be out soon. And then if you want to hear more about the Celtics, you're going to have to wait a day or two, because another episode with James myself and Lux and James Hollis, the artist formerly known as Snotty Drippin.
Yeah.
Who, like, I can confirm, thinks that DeMarcus Cousins is bad at basketball. That's exactly what he said.
That's not what he said.
He said DeMarcus Cousins is bad at basketball and Michael Jordan is overrated, and you should go.
You're just saying words now.
Just go yell at him on Twitter. But we had a great episode about the Celtics. So if you want to know more about either of these teams, go check that out. But moving right along to a much more exciting game, not necessarily an improvement in terms of quality, but an improvement in terms of the
Sixers
quality.
Sixers win! Sixers win! Sixers win!
It's official. Was that the first win? I feel like that was the first win.
Yeah, the first one of the season.
Are there any other winless teams? Or
I don't think so. The Pelicans won recently, I think.
Oh, man, that's too bad. I'm pretty... Yeah, no. I remember seeing a tweet that was like, the 76ers have made NBA history by becoming the first team to be the last winless team left, thus establishing the first tanking dynasty for 3 years in a row, if I didn't say that. Okay, so 3 years in a row, they've been the last team to get a win.
Honestly, it feels like substantially longer than that.
Yeah. Trust the process, guys. And like, actually, we can start to trust the process now because Joel Embiid...
We saw some results, man. Joel Embiid was flossy in the end of that game.
Yeah. Although, like, they should have... The 76ers really should have knocked the Pacers out. They went into overtime. I don't remember what the score is, but I do remember that the Pacers were down by 5, and they turned over the ball. Sergio Rodriguez turned over the ball. The 76ers were up by 5. That's
the Sixers were up by 5. They immediately gave up a 3-point play to Monte Ellis.
Right.
Get the ball back with 20 seconds left. Immediately turn it back over to the Pacers, who then got free throws from Paul George, tie the game, and then the Sixers couldn't really get a shot at the end. It goes to overtime.
Yeah, Joel Embiid missed a 3-pointer that was contested, and it was, you know, it was sort of a poorly drawn up play by Brett Brown, but like, maybe it was a perfect play. Maybe it was the perfect play, and the 76ers just could not execute it.
Right. It's super hard to know how good Brett Brown is at that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because, like, there are a lot of players on the Sixers roster who you, like, their threshold for execution is, like, pretty shaky.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to be, like, the play he drew up was bad because, like, they have so many players who are, like, young or have a history of making those kind of mistakes or whatever, that it's kind of hard to know exactly what was envisioned. But I bet what was envisioned probably wasn't a contested Joel Embiid 3-pointer.
Yeah, and that's evocative. Okay, let me
depends what the rest of the sentence is, whether or not that's okay, the right word.
So, like, monitor this to make sure it's proper word usage. And that thought is evocative of one of the comments that I made during the game, that watching the 76ers against the Pacers is like watching a stoppable force meeting a movable object.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's that's like...
Right,
it's like,
words, right sentiment, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Well, it's like, is Brett Brown, like, not doing it right? Or are the 76ers, like... Is Brett Brown always screwing up, or are the 76ers always screwing up? It's hard to say.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you definitely... The one thing you can definitely say is that he's got them playing very hard.
Yeah.
Even though they are decidedly not super successful. And, man, like... You saw some, like, seeing Saric just throw his body around to get that loose ball at the end of overtime.
Oh, God, that was great.
Was awesome.
Well, let me... okay, they went into overtime. Embiid was on the bench, and he did not look happy about it. He looked very unhappy. And I think everyone in the stadium went totally quiet. And I think everyone thought, like, this is it. Like, the 76ers are doing it again. They probably said that to each other because I said to Lux, like, this is it. The 76ers are doing it again. But they stayed just close enough that, you know, with 2 minutes left, Joel Embiid went into the game. And that was, you know, say whatever you want about Brett Brown's decision making. That decision was excellent. Like,
I mean, that's a ballsy
move. The crowd
move.
Went like, insane when Embiid went back in.
And that,
like,
was in direct opposition to the medical staff.
Yeah.
It was like his 24-minute limit. And he was like, we're going to need 26.
That was great. No, like, and like, I... That was I don't think I've cheered for my own team more than I cheered for the 76ers tonight so far this season.
Oh yeah, I mean, I always, like I said this last time we were watching the Sixers, like every game the Sixers play, I want them to win. Except that I also sort of always want them to lose just because of like
the legacy.
Yeah, just find something endearing about that, but like I always want them to win individual games that I'm watching, and it was really nice to see them actually pull one out, especially the way they did it, which, like, getting the ball, like, keeping close, getting Joel Embiid in at the end, and being like, all right, Joel, are you good enough to carry us to the last 2 minutes of overtime to a victory? And he was like, yes. Yes, indeed, yeah. I am good enough to do that. And he was great. He was fantastic in those last 2 minutes of overtime.
He missed his first shot. They might have gotten a rebound, but anyways, he missed, like, sort of a fadeaway, but, like, as soon as he got the ball back in the next possession, he just, like, made... Oh, Miles Turner. Miles Turner fouled out of the game. And
oh, he bossed Miles Turner into a sixth foul.
Yeah, and then, throwing the ball in, right, he got the ball back because if you have Joel Embiid and you're the 76ers, you give the ball to Embiid, and, like... That might not be the best decision. I don't even know. But, like, that's what you do. You don't do anything else.
Yeah. And he Tonka trucked LaVoy Allen.
Oh, my God.
Like,
yeah. He made LaVoy Allen look like...
A baby boy.
A baby boy. Yeah.
Like, he just bossed that man. It was crazy.
So LaVoy Allen falls over, fouls him.
He gets the finish in N1, I think.
I'm not sure if it was an N1 or if he just made the two free throws. I think it was an N1.
I think it was an N1.
I'm going to choose to believe that it was
an N1. If I were to believe it, it was a three-point play, and then they got a stop, and then he got the free throws in the next possession.
Yeah. And like, you know, 105, 109, 76ers win. But, like, you know, and it was enthralling, and it was great, and I'm happy to see the 76ers win. But, like, I'm sure you know, Lux, that I'm just as happy to see the Pacers win, because a constant theme of this podcast is that I love being right, and I didn't think the Pacers were going to be very good, and just Paul George was totally out on an island tonight. Like, he was hitting his clutch shots, and, like, to be fair, Ellis had that one drive where he got fouled, but it was on the 76ers, so, like, whatever. And, you know, just no one could do anything, and he was out there taking contested mid-range jump shots because no one on his team could create any space for him for the most part, and no one really stepped up. Especially once Miles Turner went out, it was basically over then.
Yeah, Turner was in and out of the game. He had some really good flashes, hit a big three, played some solid defense, played some bad defensive stretches, but was pretty present doing some work, but his foul trouble just really, like, you know.
That's part of the reason why I don't think he should start at center, is because he'll just foul out of the game.
Yeah, but he's got to play center to learn how to not foul out from playing center.
He doesn't have to do that. That's misunderstanding.
That's not true. Like,
I've talked about the Pacers way too much.
Yeah, but I think it's silly to say that he doesn't have to play the position to learn the position. I mean, obviously, there's like a positionless basketball element to things, but like at a certain point, like playing center helps you be a better center because you're guarding other centers.
The bottom line is, I don't think that that's what the Pacers should. If the Pacers' intention is to win, then that's not what they should be doing.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to GEICO than saving you money, GEICO also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the GEICO app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Right now. Regardless of, you know, that, I just had a Resetting the Pacers was the name of the podcast. It was like two episodes ago. Go listen to that if you want to hear more about the Pacers. But for now, let's move on to the Hornets and the Raptors. This was a really interesting game to watch because
DeMar versus Kemba show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was really, you know, the Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan versus the system, the Hornets system.
No, it was very much DeRozan. Like, I mean, yes, but it was also very much DeMar versus Kemba. Like,
I saw some really beautiful basketball from the Hornets. They were moving the ball really well.
Oh, yeah, but like, yeah, I'm just going to tell you a couple of stats from this game that I wrote down. These are the fun facts I want to share with you from before.
Okay.
So DeRozan went 14 of 26 for 34. Kemba went 12 of 19 for 40. Kemba took four more shots and played four fewer minutes than Batum and ended up with 22 more points and equal numbers of rebounds and assists.
Yeah, but they still lost, you know, and whatever. Yeah, I mean, that's how it goes sometimes.
But, and yeah, both teams did play their style and play it very well, but like at a certain point, particularly the Hornets' big run in the third and the end of the game, it was, can Kemba find a shot or get someone open, and can DeMar make his mid-range shots?
Yeah.
And at the end, DeMar was making more mid-range shots than offense that Kemba was generating. But Kemba had himself a god-dang evening. 40 points on 19 shots.
You didn't say bad words.
I didn't. But that's outrageous.
No, I mean, that's a fantastic stat line.
7 of 12 from 3.
It's so great to see Kemba hitting shots as part of a system. Because, you know, I think one of the things that you said that I think is worth touching on, DeMar DeRozan, sort of like Kyle Lowry, is like a free radical in the offense, right? It's like there's an offense being run between four players, and then there's Kyrie, or in this case, DeMar DeRozan, right? And if DeMar DeRozan or Kyrie get the ball, chances are it's going to be shot by them at some point, you know?
Yeah.
Like they're either going to shoot the ball immediately or just dribble around and do something that will end up opening them up for a jump shot. And Kemba Walker is you know, I think he was like that in the beginning of his career. I think partially that's because there wasn't always the best spacing on this Hornets team. But they've done a really good job, I think, of carrying over the success that they had last year with pretty much a space floor for the first time in Kemba's career. And then I think there's a question mark as to whether or not Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, him coming back from his shoulder injury, whether or not that was going to kill the Hornets spacing. And I've been pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, well, he actually didn't play tonight, which is weird.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah, he is not listed on the roster. I was interesting that now because I wanted to double check my sound for Kemba, which is strange. But that aside, yeah, the one thing that's interesting, particularly interesting about this game, I thought, was that, like, you got the production you'd expect basically out of the Hornets, right? You've got, well, Marvin Williams did not play well, but
he hit a couple of important shots,
though. Yeah, but he ended up 3 for 15. He got a lot of rebounds, but he was not shooting the ball well. But then you got, you know, Zeller gives you 12 on 8 shots. You've got 18 on 15 from Batum. You've got 8 on 9 from Kaminsky. You've got 10 on 5 from Hibbert. You know, these are the numbers you expect. And it's just Kemba Walker's ability to elevate that offense to another level by dropping 40 on 19.
Yeah.
Changes the game. And, like, Kemba, we talked about this outside during one of my bajillion cigarette breaks while we were watching the games. Like,
you don't smoke.
I don't smoke cigarettes. I just take cigarette-length breaks. but we were talking about this, that, like, his first in the league, Kemba was, like, just jacking shots left, right, and crazy.
Yeah.
And every year he sort of ran that in and played more a part of the system, but he's never let that part of his game go. And I think that's very good.
Yeah,
that he's got the skill to go bazonkers and get his own shot and make things, but he knows that he can't play that way 24/7.
Heat-check Kemba is best Kemba. And, like, you know, that is still true up to this point, but heat-check Kemba when he's cold, like, just chucking up shots Kemba, is not a good thing to watch. And, I mean, I think that Kemba got a bad rep, honestly, prior to the new Hornets spacey offense. Because remember, like, you remember when they were trying to run that guy, he was on the Gerald Henderson. They had a lineup of, like, Gerald Henderson, Lance Stevenson, that center who's on the Pacers now.
Al Jefferson?
Yeah, Al Jefferson. We recorded this right after we watched, and I can't remember names after a certain amount of time.
Yeah, well, I think the
but anyways, there was no spacing, and the offense was really slow. And I think that a lot of the time, there was no offense that could be generated, and he had a terrible field goal percentage, basically because they gave the ball to Kemba with, like, 8 seconds left after they failed to generate any offense, and he had to just, like, get something up. Like, I think
I think that's true to a large extent. But then you remember how you think about how he played in college, and it was very much the same, like, probe the offense a bunch, fire up something crazy, and it falls with surprising regularity. And that's how he was the first couple years, and I think that a part of that is that, like, there was no, like, much like in college, there wasn't much of another option. Like, yeah. He had to be the main option. And I think it's a testament to both Kemba's work ethic and Steve Clifford's coaching that he came into the league with a set of bad habits. He came to a situation that reinforced those bad habits, and he's breaking those bad habits and becoming a better player.
Yeah, that's I couldn't have put that better myself.
And I think that that's very, like, a huge testament to the quality there. And you see it across the board. You see Batum improving. They got 10 points from Roy Hibbert. Like, Roy Hibbert's literally a dead person. Like, that's crazy.
I think we all knew that Roy Hibbert was going to come back from the grave. Well, at least, I don't know. I recently like the Hornets for whatever reason. It's not that I think they're particularly relevant, but so I talked to Doug Branson. Go check out Locked on Hornets. They're great. And, you know, he covers the Hornets, which is why he hosts a show called Locked on Hornets. One of the things that we went over was Roy Hibbert and how he was probably going to have a resurgent year. I mean, like, that Lakers situation was really bad. Yeah, and he was
trashy at the end of his run in Indiana, too.
Yeah, I mean, but he, I mean, a resurgence doesn't mean that he's ever going to be back to Defensive Player of the Year, Roy Hibbert. I think that that's unlikely, but, like, I think that you know, I mean, Jeremy Lin sort of had a resurgent year in Charlotte, and Marvin Williams revived his career in Charlotte, and Nick Batum, like, sort of came back from the grave. Jeremy Lin.
Or at least Batum reached sort of new heights.
Yeah, that's a better way of putting it. But, I mean, Batum was, like, basically involved in a throwaway trade for that rookie. Power forward on the Blazers.
Oh,
he's a sophomore now.
Ooh, he's got the cornrow, he's got the braids.
Yeah, he's crazy.
He went to Indiana. Noah Vonleh.
Yeah, Noah Vonleh. So, yeah, I think that that's a consistent trend of the Hornets, is that they're sort of like the Spurs, right? It's like system basketball is good.
Yeah.
Some good stuff.
And I think Clifford really does a great job of finding what players do well and putting them in positions to succeed and getting their confidence up generally, and then, like, letting them spread their wings a little bit. And I think he, you know, he has a track record. But they lost to the Raptors, and Raptors sort of flexed their depth. Like, they had five players in double figures, plus Ross had eight.
Yeah.
Six players in double figures, rather. Sorry, that was an underestimate. Like, Carroll has 10, Valanciunas has 12, Lowry has 19, DeRozan has 34, Nguera has 10, Joseph has 12. And those were earned buckets, you know? Like, Bebe, I thought, looked real good for stretches. Corey Joseph was doing things. Like, I think
Bebe Nguera continued to show why, despite him not necessarily having a positive impact when he's on the court, why the Raptors continue to hope that he eventually will. Because, like, he's got hops, and he's long, big, and he's got long
he's
arms.
Strong.
And like, he's athletic, and he rebounds really well, and he blocks shots really well. He's not a great rim protector, though. But, like, yeah, and like, limited doses, he's good. This was a matchup of, you know, maybe the two best coaches in the Eastern Conference. I mean,
Stan Van.
Like, definitely top five. And Brad Stevens. But, like, you know, you could make the argument that these are the two best coaches in the Eastern Conference. There's DeMar DeRozan. It's kind of funny that it took this long to talk about DeMar DeRozan. So, I tweeted during the game that I think that just that little bit extra. So, his shot release is definitely faster, and his arc is higher, which means it's harder to block in two different ways, and he's hitting a lot more of these mid-range jump shots, right? So, like, shooters get hot, right? That's the thing that happens. But if this continues, I think that, you know, it's not like players like DeMar DeRozan haven't been able to succeed in the playoffs. In fact, those players normally do really well because it's so hard to generate an actually good shot in the playoffs.
Napa know-how.
A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Yeah, I think that that's spot on. I mean, we were saying, something that came up earlier in conversation, that, like, we kind of need to reflect on our evaluative mechanisms for DeMar DeRozan in particular and other players like him, that, like, at a certain point, if what you do is make wacky mid-range jump shots, and you're steady making a high clip of your wacky mid-range jump shots, at a certain point, it may just be a good idea for you to take wacky mid-range jump shots. Like,
And this is
sort of the same thing as, like, Steph Curry shooting from 40 feet, right? Like, for a while we were,
or
like,
Dirk taking wacky mid-range jump shots.
Yeah, or Dirk. Yeah, exactly.
You hit a certain threshold of effectiveness that, like, you go, girl.
Right, there's a point where it's like, Steph Curry, don't shoot from there. That's the logo. But then it's like, oh, he keeps making shots from the logo. I guess you can do that. And it's like, DeMar, don't hit a right falling fadeaway with a defender in your face. But you hit it every time. So, like,
eventually you stop that. Your initial reticence is gone. And, like, I mean, Steph definitely got to the point that it's like, I mean, when I watch Steph Curry, every time he takes a three-pointer that any other person would be stupid to take who isn't named Damian Lillard, then I'm like, I don't have that initial, like, you know, what are you doing, man, thought. And in fact, like, you are like, there's this satisfaction, you know?
Yeah, that's probably,
I mean, I'm from Dallas, right? And like, when Dirk gets that mid-range jump shot off of one leg from the top of the key, like, that's the best possible thing that could happen to end a possession in Dallas for the last 10 years, because, like, he hits that always, you know? So if DeMar DeRozan can keep it up, then he'll reach that status that, like, you know, he'll take a weird mid-range jump shot and we'll be like, okay, you know, that's how Michael Jordan created offense and it worked.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, you'd think that over, it was about 8 games, he'd have had some shaky business, but he's still averaging 34. He's still shooting great percentages.
Leading
league in scoring. It's and doing it in a way that is sort of antithetical to the way we think about basketball in 2016. And it's,
well, the two examples that we just talked about both won MVPs.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, DeMar DeRozan for MVP. You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, and it's kind of crazy to think about, but it's a real thing that, like, when you can find those exceptions to the rule that work, like, teams are actively trying to chase him off the three-point line, it's like, he doesn't want to be there.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's fine. And then they're like, all right, we'll play you real close here. And it's like, all right, fine. He wants to take a weird high-arcing fadeaway anyway. Like, where do you, you know, it just changes the way you play defense. And then that's just like, the ball moves so quickly right now. The Raptors run such a pretty solid offense that, like, the more you give defenders to think about in terms of making conscious choices, not just instinct choices or system choices, making conscious, like, I could do this or that choices.
Right.
That makes their job that much harder.
That is, yeah, that's a really good point. And that sort of reinforces the point that we initially made that, like, you know, there is a defined Raptors system, but it's like their offense is Raptors system. And then DeMar DeRozan's also there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And like, if the ball ends up in DeRozan's hands, he might put the ball back into the system that the other four players are running, maybe, but he also might just hit up, shoot shoot Daryl Morey's worst nightmare type mid-range jump shot and then make it, and it's fine. Well,
and one thing I like about DeRozan, and this, especially in the context we're talking about him, is that he runs the cuts of the offense, he sets the screens, he does the dirty work of the offense when he doesn't have the ball in his hands. He does good work without the ball. And then he gets the ball and is like, eh, like, sort of weighs off the existence of the offense. But, like, I'm fine with that if it's effective. And he does it in a way that doesn't detract from the overall effectiveness of the system, right? Like, we saw towards the end in L.A., like, the Lakers were trying to run some things and Kobe was just, like, not having it.
Yeah.
Right? When he didn't have the ball in his hands, he wasn't moving his defender around. He wasn't sending picks. Not that people ask Kobe to send all the picks ever in his career. But, like, you know, you get that with players. You get players who aren't full, like, who are great scoring options, but who aren't fully a part of the system, who aren't doing the dirty work of the system. And that's not DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah.
DeMar DeRozan does the little things. He just also gets most of his points by slowing the system down and, like, cutting, like, dribbling from the 3-point line to the free throw line and hitting a weird jumper. But, like, again, that's fine, especially because he does it in a way that doesn't give the defense, that doesn't create a weakness in the offense. It doesn't give the defense fewer things to cover. In fact, it gives them more things to cover. Like, they have to worry about him scoring through the offense and not through the offense. They still have to worry about the rest of the offense as well.
So that's an interesting point to transition with into the next game that we're going to talk about. And I don't know, maybe the last game. But that's something that, if anything, Coach Casey has banked on, is the fact that, like, DeMar DeRozan's going to do some weird stuff that's going to take a while, and he's going to put up a weird mid-range jump shot. And also, you know, frankly, that when the ball, when you can tell about 3 or 4 seconds before he actually shoots that, like, he's getting ready to shoot. Like, once he starts to, like, do his, like, little dribble stuff and, you know, pump fakey type, triple threat type stuff, you know he's about to shoot. Like, it's pretty much a given. So, but what that means is, right, you're burning time off the clock, and you're also giving, he's basically, you know, alerting his teammates, like, get back on defense because, like, this offensive possession is basically over. So when you run systems like that, then you can get back in transition and you can have an elite defense, and you also keep the scoring low, Which is basically what the Cavs did to beat the Warriors in the playoffs, right?
Right, and that's the...
And that's what Casey's always done.
Yeah, and that was sort of like the mathematical revelation of college basketball like 4 or 5 years ago, maybe even more.
Yeah.
Was the idea that that if you're playing a North Carolina or a Duke or whatever, and you're, I don't know, North Iowa State, like, you want to play slow because the more possessions there are, the more opportunities that those more talented teams have to display their greater talent.
And so, like, the bow on top, right? And the reason why the Raptors, I think, won 52 or something games, why they broke 50 games, is because in addition to that, right, keeping it so that there's not a high degree of variance when the starters are on the floor, their bench lineup, the key reason why everyone wonders why Coach Casey is like, why aren't you starting Patrick Patterson at the four? It's because, like, that Kyle Lowry plus Corey Joseph plus Patrick Patterson lineup has been devastating for all of eternity, right? So, you know, and they run the floor super well. Lineups with Patrick Patterson and two point guards, like, they will always outscore whoever the bench is, right? So, you know, they get so many points from their bench unit, right? And then just, like, try to, like, you know, do, like, CPR resuscitation while their starters are out there, right? They're just trying to, like, keep it, you know, slow during their minutes when the starters are playing. And then on the bench units, they are betting on the fact that their bench unit is going to be better than the opposing teams and they're going to score better. And if you win those minutes by a lot, because there's a lot of possessions, then it doesn't matter that you might not be winning your starting lineup minutes. And the reason why I brought this up is because I think that the Clippers finally have figured out how to do that.
I mean,
their bench just puts up a lot of points.
Yeah,
know?
That wasn't exactly the case tonight against the Thunder. I think the Thunder actually outscored them bench-wise.
Yeah.
But the Clippers have the luxury of having a super talented, super effective starting five and a very good bench. And, I mean,
tonight was a weird variance. Like, it was weird.
It's also worth noting that, like, you know, Jamal Crawford comes to the bench was a huge part of them holding their lead in the fourth quarter. Like, it's not like their bench didn't contribute in huge ways, because obviously they did. And maybe by the end, actually, I'm going to double check this. I think maybe they even got pretty close to catching up to the Thunder in terms of bench scoring. It was 33 to, I mean, they actually got a little, yeah, Jamal Crawford going off in the fourth actually got them ahead of the Thunder by the end.
Yeah.
They got 14 points from not Jamal Crawford off the bench, but Jamal Crawford had 20 or 19.
I mean, the reason why this is notable for the Clippers in general, not necessarily for this game. So sorry if you wanted a breakdown. This game is weird. We will go over it, but the reason I started thinking about the Clippers is because it's not that the thing with the Clippers has always been that, okay, we have a lineup with, you know, Chris Paul, JJ Redick, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan. If those four players are actually playing and not injured or indisposed, then, like, we're starting lineup is going to be better than your starting lineup. But then they put a bunch of trash out there because Doc Rivers doesn't know how to be a GM. But now they're putting out this lineup with Mo Spates, right, and three guards, you know, like Ray Ray, and then Austin Rivers has improved a lot, and then Jamal Crawford is, like, has all the spacing to, like, do his weird stuff. So, like, they get, you know, they get fast break points. They get fast break points, but then, like, if it does slow down and the defense does get back, you just give it to Jamal Crawford and he does a weird stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's what was happening. I mean, that was sort of the story of the fourth quarter. It was the Thunder would make these runs where they were Sabonis, who had himself a game going 4 or 5 from three, and Adams and Cantor were doing work inside, and they were able to put up some points, and Westbrook, you know, 29 points, 14 rebounds, 9 assists, you know, had himself a great game. And in the fourth quarter, they were able to make runs, but consistently, and played good defense, but consistently Jamal Crawford would just make stuff happen.
Yeah.
Like, they were actually doing a really good job defending DeAndre and Blake and Chris Paul in the fourth quarter, but Jamal Crawford would find some space, hit a three, find some space, hit a long two, and just kill these runs. And they just couldn't break through. Like, anytime the Thunder looked like they were about to take the lead or tie the game, Jamal Crawford just, like, hit him with something else.
Yeah, and that's that is a interesting way to play it. I never thought that this was the way that the Clippers were going to figure out their bench. Just because it's not a very... It doesn't strike me as a very Doc Rivers thing to do, right? I mean, these bench units are, like, really offensive juggernauts. I mean, really, like, playing most space at center, like, that's a... You know, that's what the Warriors bench did, right? They scored a whole bunch of points. They dropped a bunch of points on you. They also had good defense, but, like...
I mean, no, but it's a lopsided unit, especially on the Clippers. Like, it's a very good offensive unit with a lot of defensive weaknesses.
Right. But, meanwhile, their starting unit, right? I mean, like... Luka Doncic is so good at doing what Doc Rivers wants him to do. And, you know, it's like on offense, stand in the corner and hit corner threes. And, like, he'll do it. He's not like Ray Allen or Shane Battier or anything like that. But he'll hit some, you know, and don't do anything else. That's pretty much all he does. And that's great. That's cool. You have really good players who should be doing your stuff anyways.
I mean, there was that one possession where... Chris Paul drove. This is the one where, like, it was a display of just, like, how dangerous every player in the Clippers can be and how they can just destroy a defense. Because Chris Paul drives, defense collapses. He swings out to Blake. The defense does a really good job readjusting, but Blake doesn't even take time to catch it. Just left-hand taps it to the corner where Mabute was. Mabute shoots. Or Mabute gets covered because they all swarm to that corner. Swings it back to Blake. Blake, in the rotation, goes cross-court to, I think it was Redick, who missed the three, but probably had, like, 4 seconds to load it up. Because Blake, without moving, had moved their entire defense to the opposite corner of the court. Like, and
that's the appropriate response, too. Is like, Chris Paul is scary, and Blake Griffin is really scary.
Right.
You know, and J.J. Redick is really scary. That's why you don't leave him open, but they did, because
yeah, I mean,
they
were more scared of other people. Was in the corner and between the side. Regardless of how that played out, but, like...
And now, insurance-minded speeches from Geico.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the Geico app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the Geico app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
The point is, like, you think about that offense, you think about Chris Paul can break things down, and Blake Griffin can initiate on his own, but it's not just that, it's that those two are operating on this level right now where, like, without moving his feet, Blake Griffin got all 5 defenders on the Thunder out of position. Like, he didn't move. Like, that's so crazy to me.
Yeah.
And
It's been a really important development in his game that he can really hit jump shots. Like, I think it's... You can sort of tell there are certain releases, and Dwayne Wade's releases like this, and Sean Livingston's releases like this. It's you can tell because the propulsion mechanism is mostly the wrist, right? That I think are better for mid-range and close, right? But then you can't repeat that mechanism because your wrists aren't strong enough to launch it from the three-point shot, right? Which is why Sean Livingston, not a great three-point shooter. Dwayne Wade, not a great three-point shooter. Blake Griffin, not a great one. But, like, your wrists are strong enough, and you can be have the tactile, like, dexterity or whatever, right? To, like, use your wrists to just, like, sort of plop it in from mid-range, from, like, 18 feet and in. And he's gotten really good at that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's valuable.
And they have to respect the dribble drive. Like, he's fantastic. One thing in the Thunder I want to talk about is Victor Oladipo. And it's like, what we make of Victor Oladipo. Because tonight, like, he went 4 of 8 from 3. That's good. He played some solid defense. That's good. He initiated some offensive possessions on his own. That's good. He also chugged a shot from his hip that hit the top corner of the backboard and flew away. He also got a defender in the air at the three-point line and then just passed up the obvious chance to draw a foul. Like, he's kind of hard to watch because... He does some things very well, but then there's other things that just, like, don't make any sense.
Yeah, I sure do hope that Billy Donovan is a good coach, you know? I'm still getting a read on Billy Donovan. The fact that the Thunder are good, and I had to apologize on Twitter. You know, I had people on for team previews. I had a guest, you know, media members from each team. And my Thunder guest I had on and just told him that his team was going to be really bad. So the other day I apologized and said, like, you know, I'm sorry that I dismissed the Thunder. I shouldn't have done that. And long story short, the reason why, I mean, maybe Donovan is good, right? You know,
well, I think we can,
'cause he's figured it out. But the point is, like, he came from a Magic system that was a crap show, right? And he has bad habits. And part of that is because, like, the Kemba thing, right? You know, they're just like, he had to do weird things to create stuff out of nowhere. So he has bad habits. He's not that much different from Westbrook, I think, honestly.
I mean, I think there are comparisons to be made, but I think Westbrook came into a pretty perfect situation for him and had like a lot of space to like figure out his game.
Yeah.
In a way that Oladipo hasn't. So I think that's true. And I think we can safely say at least that Donovan is a good tactical coach. And you'd assume that a good college coach is going to be a good teacher, development guy, but you never know how this is going to play in the pros. So we'll see. This is actually going to be really interesting to see because he has a young team that he can develop. But like last year against the Spurs, like he did some really brilliant coaching against the Spurs. I mean, I think he did some really good work. He also, there was some silly stuff that happened, but like when you're forced to play Deion Waiters in significant minutes, like silly stuff is going to happen.
Okay, look, like I think I'm just being salty because I have no like personal vendetta against the Thunder whatsoever. There's like a big part of me that is like, hell yeah, Thunder, like, you know, prove everyone else wrong, including me. But that's the part that like I think I'm being salty because they should have beaten the Warriors, right? I mean, like they were up 3-1 on the Warriors, and that was like the rotations and stuff, and the way that Billy Donovan coached that team during that Western Conference Finals was totally awesome. And you're right, like the Spurs series, that was smart. It was smart to do the Cantor Adams thing. And then, you know, now he's like doing well with the Thunder at this beginning of the year when I said they were going to be bad. So, look, he's probably a really good coach.
Well, we know he's a good tactical coach, and we're going to see if he's a good development coach.
I probably should say that he definitely is a really good coach.
Well, we'll see. We got to see. We got to see what Sabonis turns into, right? Because even 4-5-3 Sabonis is great. 4-5-3 is great, but one rebound, two assists when you're big man, not so great.
But, you know, I mean, Domantas Sabonis, his primary contribution to this team is they have the second best defense in the league, I'm pretty sure, the Thunder do. And, like,
or at least they did recently. I don't know if that's so true.
They have a top five defense in the league, and a lot of that has to do with Sabonis. What? Why? Yeah, Sabonis is a great defender.
Yeah, he's a good defender, but like, I guess what I mean is like,
he's a great positional defender.
Yeah, he's strong, but there's, you know, Sabonis has good things about him, but he's not as fantastic rebounder, the kind of rebounder you want from that position.
But he's also playing next to Steven Adams.
Yeah, true, but just, you know.
And the Thunder don't have problems getting rebounds.
Yeah,
they do against the Clippers because everyone does.
Yeah.
Like, the Clippers out-rebounded the Spurs a lot.
Yeah, one player who played tonight, who I was watching a little bit, who hasn't played much this game, is what's his name? Samaj Kristen? Tristan? I don't know how you say his last name. Kristen, I think. He's a rookie or second-year point guard out of Xavier. He, 3-for-8-for-9, 4 assists, made his 1-for-3-pointer that he took. If they can get, and he's like sort of a more classic shooting, quick, distributing point guard kind of guy. And if they can get him coached up to be a viable third guard behind Oladipo and Westbrook, I think that would be huge for that team.
I mean, poor Cam Newton, Cam Payne, you know?
Yeah, I mean, is he hurt?
Yeah, dude, I think he might have torn his ACL or something big.
Yeah, I mean, Cam Payne, that's rough, because there's lots to like about Cam Payne.
I really like Cam Payne, yeah.
But if they can get Samaj Kristen stepping up, like,
you know, if they continue to get weird contributions from weird players that you wouldn't expect, like, they're going to continue proving me wrong. So.
I mean, and that's where we're going to find out how good a coach Donovan is, right? Because, like, if he can get those performances out of those players,
yeah,
then, like, if it's clear that he's smart enough to game plan playoff series and he can get the best out of, like, players and develop players, then he's an asset. Then he's, like, decidedly an asset for the team in a way that few coaches are.
The part of me that is a good person is really, really happy for the Thunder because it looks like I'm being proven wrong and like that's what I want for the Thunder. The part of me that like is a narcissist really doesn't like it that I'm wrong. So I have weird mixed feelings about the Thunder. You're just going to have to like be patient with me, listeners, while I figure out my conflicted feelings. Like, I don't know. I feel like I'm Bella being torn between Edward Vampire and whoever.
Jacob the Werewolf.
Jacob the Werewolf, right. You know?
Jacob the Werewolf falls in love with a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. The end of that, yeah. the end of that series is weird.
That whole series is a little bit weird. But, yeah. Okay. But you get what I'm saying. Like, I feel like I'm being pulled between two lovers, which is like being right and seeing a team that is the underdog succeed.
My two cents on this is I prefer to be wrong and have something cool happen than be right and have things be boring.
No, but I really like being right.
Yeah, I guess I'm just not that attached to being correct about things.
Like, I don't know. I think my...
But anyways, but so like, yeah, you look at this game and we saw some really good stuff from the Thunder. Their offense, I thought, was more effective and against a very solid Clippers defense than I expected it to be. It wasn't just Russ pounding his head against the wall, although there was a fair amount of that. It was getting and making a lot of open threes. Probably, honestly, made threes at a higher clip than we can reasonably expect. Like, they shot 57% from three. Like, that's not going to happen regularly. But they were getting open looks.
But it keeps happening regularly that, like, they were so close. They could have won this game. And, like, you know, all of my reasonable thoughts about the Thunder, and this is a caveat. Like, there's some spooky stuff going on around the Thunder. Like, you know,
there's a haunted hotel in Oklahoma City.
There is, yeah. But, you know, like, they're doing weird stuff. Domantas Sabonis shouldn't be working out right now, and they shouldn't be getting all this. It's entirely possible that they're a mirage, and the House of Cards is going to fall soon. I don't know.
I think that their offense is probably going to be pretty good. I think their defense is not quite as good as it's been so far. I think they're probably going to be... I don't think they're going to keep up the clip of being like 7 and like, I don't think they're going to win 70% of their games, right? I don't think they're going to be a team, you know, what is it? What would that make them? Like 56, 57 win team. Like, I don't think that that's really going to happen. But as far as them making the playoffs, I think that's a pretty reasonable goal for them.
Yeah. Like, and here, let me, unless you have anything else to say, let me end the podcast. Let me end the podcast with this. Is that cool? I have like one more idea.
Think if I have anything to say about the Clippers really quick. I have no specific notes about it except for my notes literally read Jamal Crawford ruined everything and I love Blake Griffin are my last two notes. I think we've already gone over both of those.
Okay, well, so my last thought on the Thunder, I didn't think that the Thunder were going to make the playoffs. And I don't arrive on conclusions like that because of feelings. Like, I just look at a team and think rationally, like, what are they going to be able to execute given their coach and their players and their system and the continuity? I am a fairly rational agent in this regard. There's a distinct possibility that everything is going to fall apart, but there's also a distinct possibility that I'm wrong, because whether or not I like to admit it, I could be wrong. So,
oh, also DeAndre Jordan hit a crazy left-handed tip-in.
Yeah.
That was some of the...
And, no free throws.
Yeah. He hit six total, and that's... Given that it's DeAndre Jordan, I'm sure he missed a lot more than that. But the tip-in was... And I think you're super right about the Thunder. I just want to point out that if you get a chance to... If you watch this game, or, watch the League Pass replay or whatever, keep a lookout for this lefty tip-in from the third or fourth quarter, because it was outrageous how far from the basket he was, and he had to go over a dude with his left hand. It was just insane.
DeAndre is very, very good. And the Clippers are really good.
The Clippers are so good. It's like, it's one of those weird things, because you're like years of Lob City have primed me to be like, the Clippers are really cool to watch, and they're so cool to watch, it's become kind of boring. I'm kind of sick of just them dunking everywhere and running this kind of boring offense or whatever.
But we haven't seen it in a long time. Blake Griffin was out forever.
Yeah.
It's novel again.
It's a little novel. What's most novel is that,
the world... Dude, Blake Griffin is the Avatar. The world... he disappeared, and the world thought he was dead. And then 100 years later, he came back and,
Well, there's definitely a little bit of that, for sure.
Saving the Clippers.
And just, But every year, you're trying to be, eventually the wheels are going to fall off, right? that's like just what we're primed to expect from the Clippers now. Like, whether it's cough of a 3-1 lead to Houston, or Blake Griffin punches some dude, or whatever. Like, we're primed to expect things to fall apart. But the way that they look right now is just like, it just doesn't feel like that. I mean, obviously, Chris Paul's knees could explode tomorrow. Knock on wood that they don't, obviously. But, like, you know, things can go wrong. It just doesn't feel, it just has, doesn't, this season doesn't have that kind of feeling of, like, yeah, it's cool to drive this hot rod, but I know I'm going to crash into a boulder eventually. It just feels like it's cool to drive the car. Like,
let me ask you, you know, if we're thinking about it reasonably and not, like, you know, I think that, you know, we get wrapped up in, like, injury prone, and we get wrapped up in all of the times that the Clippers fell apart were because of different reasons. I mean, the first time against the Spurs, it was because they were completely exhausted because of that bench problem. All of their starters were playing like 45 minutes a game. They got to the playoffs. They had crap on the bench. That was when Glenn Davis and Hedo Turkoglu were the two best players on the bench. Like, they fell apart in the playoffs because the Spurs were a great team. I think they went on to win a championship. And then the year after, it was because Josh Smith hit 5 threes in a row in the fourth quarter.
And Corey Brewer had a cute game.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, and then after that, you know, the Clippers lost because in the same game, within 5 minutes of each other, like, Blake Griffin's hamstring gave out, and Chris Paul, like, broke his foot or something like that. His hand or something. Yeah. I don't know. Like, these are all isolated incidents. So you start to think, like, oh, they're cursed, and that is reinforced upon itself because it's the Clippers. But, like, putting all of that aside, right, what's more realistic, like, the Warriors having a serious injury or the Clippers? Because, like, the Warriors do have Steph Curry with his history of ankles, and, like, Kevin, it was not very long ago that Kevin Durant's feet were a real issue and a real recurring issue, too. So, like, I'm not sure the Clippers are any more prone to the, historically, they're prone to catastrophe, but, like, I think that we might be expecting catastrophe, and that's not fair.
Well, I think that's what I mean, is that I feel like there's, like, an ontological breakthrough with the Clippers, like, that for years we do expect catastrophe because it's, like, built into their being on, like, a fundamental, like, design kind of level. But, like, that doesn't feel true this year. It feels like they are, like, they have this kind of, like, positive momentum, and the bench is there in a way it hasn't been in the past, and, like, they seem like they're having more fun, and Chris Paul seems, like, less crotchety so far. I mean, he's got
still crotchety, but
74 more games to get crotchety.
I also think, like, you know, they're winning and they look good, so he's not going to be as crotchety.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, just what I'm saying, like, all the things about the Clippers that made everyone go, like, yeah, I mean, they're going to win 60 games, but, like, they're not going to make the finals, just don't seem like they're true anymore.
And part of the reason is because the Warriors are still figuring their stuff out.
Right. I mean, obviously, if the Warriors show up in January with, like, the super buzzsaw 125 points a game team, that they could be, like, all sound stupid for having said this about the Clippers, because it's like, oh, the Clippers didn't get hurt, but then they just won 60 games and ran into a buzzsaw like they always do. But that's not inevitable in the same way that it's felt before.
Well, and saying what about the Clippers? Like, are we going to look like, you're saying, okay, well, if it comes around January and the Clippers get destroyed, like, we're going to look stupid for saying what about the Clippers? I'm not sure I'm making any type of qualitative claim about the Clippers, except that they're good unless something happens, and they've been good except things happened.
Yeah. I mean, that's not unfair. That's not an unfair way of characterizing the discussion.
Okay, well, it's been a long night, man.
Yeah, it's been a long one.
Here in the Almighty Baller Studios.
We've been holed up in the compound for like 6 hours.
Yeah. I might, if we don't end this podcast, I might start looking at, you know those cartoons when, you know, one of the guys is really hungry and they look at the other guy and they turn into a chicken wing or something? Yeah, that might start happening.
That just happened in a movie I watched today.
Oh, really?
Hunt for the Wilder People? Yeah, there's a part where this kid's in the woods and he's hungry, and then the grand, like, the old man comes around and it, like, you just hear sounds and the kid turns and just cuts to, like, a giant puppet of a hamburger. And he's like, and then he cuts back and it's just
normal. Thanks for listening to Unguarded Shooting.
It's a good movie. You should watch it. Hunt for the Wilder People. It's on Amazon for $5.
Thanks for listening to Unguarded Shooting. You've been listening to the two hosts of the show, Chris Axman. We break down games all the time. All right. And by we, I mean my other person who's... My co-host, Lux.
Yeah, me, Lux, Michael Luxembourg, at ML Surfboard is where you can find me on the web.
Yeah, and at Lux Writes, even though it's, you know, a work in progress.
Yeah, something. Work in progress. I need to add some more vids.
Not the design, which I did.
The design is good. I just need to get everything, all the logistics of the content set up.
Right. So, yeah, anyways, he's one of those weird creative people, so, you know, hire him to do stuff.
Yeah, if you want, I'll do it.
Yeah. Anyways, at least follow him at MLS Surfboard and follow me at Almighty Ballin. You know, next time we'll do some, you know, capitalist type pitchy stuff. I will say, although we're not going to get into the specifics, our supporters, our advertisers are great, and I totally recommend their products. And you can find out what products those are next time when you listen to Unguarded Shooting.
Call that a tease.
Unguarded Shooting in the umbrella show. It's a split off of Almighty Ballin. This is on the Almighty Ballin feed.
Yeah, just sneak in there. Well, it's because I often go host Almighty Ballin. Yeah.
So anyways, yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Have a good night, or morning, or afternoon.
Or... Bye.
Cabela's is coming to Northern Virginia with a spectacular new store in Gainesville. Find everything you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and shooting sports, plus much more. Join us for our grand opening celebration Thursday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Be one of the first 500 in line and receive a Cabela's gift card worth up to $500, plus a chance to win one of three Remington firearms. See store for details. Don't miss Cabela's grand opening in Gainesville, located off I-66 and Highway 29 near Virginia Gateway.